Cliff Levingston joins us on Sports Byline USA. He was a forward who played 13 seasons of professional basketball, drafted in the first round by the Detroit Pistons out of Wichita State, but he also is an NBA champion not once but twice, as he won those with the Chicago Bulls and the first two Michael Jordan championship teams. Cliff, when you got drafted in the first round, I've often wondered how players that get drafted feel about the teams that draft them, knowing that they can't do anything about it. What was your reaction to Detroit taking you?
I was just happy to be in the league. You know, I was when I came in, you know, my whole thing, I left school a year early, and I said, I just want to be in the top 10. If I'm in the top 10, I'm successful. I don't care what team it was. You know, it was when I was getting drafted, it was anywhere from 5 to 10 where I was going to get drafted at. So, you know, when I went ninth, I was happy. You know, Detroit Pistons, and, you know, they had a good young team at the time with Isaiah, Kelly Chipuka, you know, John Long, you know, Bill Laimbeer. So I was happy just to be part of that group.
Who was it that dictated the image of that team, the bad boy image? Where did that come from, Cliff?
Well, you know what? I was after the bad boys. I came in, I was before the bad boys. And, you know, when I left the Detroit Pistons, they wanted a older, more mature, hard-nosed type of guys, you know, who understood what it took to get to the next level. Because, you know, my first year, we didn't make the playoffs. My second year, we lost to New York in the first round to Bernard King. So, you know, they traded me to Atlanta for Danny Rounford, which was an older, more established player, which, you know, I didn't mind because I went to a younger, youthful team, which was the Atlanta Hawks. So, you know, the bad boy phrase, I don't know where that came from, you know, because I wasn't part of that bad boy era.
I guess what I'm talking about is that the players that were part of that bad boy era were in place or right there when you were there as well. And I'm just wondering, as you looked at that conglomeration of players that went on to become known as the bad boys, where do you think it emanated within them? I mean, how that attitude came to the surface?
Well, the attitude they got, I know they were tired of getting knocked around by Boston and New York and, you know, and at that time, Washington Bullets, you know. They were always banging the Pistons around. So, you know, they were looking for hard-nosed guys. And when they got these guys, they decided, you know, we're going to be the bullies of the league. So, and that's where they came from. They just came from a tough, gritty bunch of guys, you know, led by Isaiah and, you know, Mark McGuire. You know, then they brought along Dennis Rodman and John Sally. So, that's how it all came about, because they, you know, they got tired of being the punching bags of the Eastern Conference.
When you take a look at Atlanta, you said that they were a young, developing team. I always find those type of teams interesting. Tell me a little bit how a young team begins to evolve into one that's a seasoned team.
Well, you know, I would say the 87 Hawks was my favorite team to play for, because we were all around the same age. We all enjoyed the same thing, but we did everything together. You know, when you got like, you know, Oklahoma City and also Memphis remind me of when Atlanta Hawks first started getting together. We were an exciting bunch. Everybody was high-flying. Everybody was full of energy. And, you know, when you have guys like that on a team, it makes it exciting for the city, because everybody can feel your youthfulness. They can feel your drive, your happiness, your cohesiveness. The whole city gets behind you when it comes like that. And that's what a young team is about, you know, getting to understand we can play together and win some games. But then you still need that veteran leadership to take you over the hump. And that's what, you know, a lot of youthful teams don't have, is that veteran leadership that's going to take them to the next level. You know, not just getting there. The youthfulness and the energy gets you there, but the experience and the veteranship takes you over to the next level.
Yeah, you stole the words right out of my mouth about that veteran leadership. Where did that come from on that team? And it's really kind of a sensitive area, is it not? Because when you've got young guys, Cliff, guys that know how to play the game, they may not be willing to follow that veteran leadership direction. Talk to me a little bit of where that direction came from on the Hawks.
Well, you know, back then it was more of your elders led your team, not who had the most money, who was the most talented player. It was more or less the elders. Tree Rollins was out. Elder statement of the team, and then we had Ray Williams. I mean, not Ray Williams. Yeah, Williams, Guy Williams, who also was one of the elder guys on the team. So we had a few guys who were older than us who led us and guided us. You know, you have to have that in order to get to the next level. Nowadays, it's about the money. Who makes the most money? Who has the say on the team? Where they don't look at the older guys who've been there down the block or two, you know, to lead you to where you need to go. It's a different kind of game now. You know, like I said, it's more or less money-driven opposed to respect-driven back then when I came in.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. You go off to Chicago in 1990, and, of course, as I indicated at the outset, you won a couple of championship rings in 91 and 92 on those first two Michael Jordan championship teams. Tell me what you saw in Michael Jordan when you joined that team in Chicago. Tell me about his game at that particular point.
Well, you know, when playing against him, you see one thing. But playing with him, you see a totally different picture. You know, I thought he was a whiner, and he always got all the calls when he was, you know, I was playing against him. But playing with him, you see the beating he takes. You know, he gets beat from the time he gets down the floor all the way to the end of the play. A lot of people just see the end result, but getting to the ball, I mean, he's been grabbed, held, pushed, you know, so you see all that. And what I liked about Michael, you know, when I came to the Bulls, my job basically was to push Scottie Pippen, bang him up, beat him up, so he can get used to the physical play. You know, and then once that happened, we started to gel. Well, what Michael did was he didn't want to be the best player on the court. I mean, he wanted to be the best player on the court, but he also wanted good players around him to make his job easier. So he taught guys how to play the style of basketball that he wanted them to play, which is get on the floor, get to your spot, know where you're supposed to be, and then on the defensive end, no layups.
Cliff, you know as well as I do that when you're on a talented team, and especially an emerging championship team like the Chicago Bulls were in the early 90s, those egos sometimes do not blend together. And when you're talking about Scottie Pippen, you're talking about Michael Jordan, you're talking about Dennis Rodman, tell me how that all worked together.
Well, you know, your leaders is what sets the tone. Michael understood what it takes to be a leader. The leader is to lead your players in position to succeed, not just to lead to win, but lead to succeed. And what Michael did was he put everybody's ego in check. You know, this is my team, in so many words, but everyone has an important role on this team. You do what you're supposed to do, we can win. Don't try to do my job. Don't try to do his job. Do your job. And that was the success for the Bulls, is because your leader understood what needed to be done, and he made sure everybody did what they were supposed to do, and not more than what they were supposed to do. And, you know, anything in life, one thing affects the other thing. You know, you look at a clock. A clock's hands can't turn unless all the cogs are moving in the right direction. You know, one may be going left, one may be going right, but they're all purpose is to move the big hands around the clock. And that's what the Chicago Bulls was like. It was like everyone understood what we need to do, and we all knew that if we do what we're supposed to do, the wins will go in the right direction and a championship will evolve.
I've got an observation, and if I'm wrong about this, Cliff, feel free to correct me on it, but I really thought that Scottie Pippen probably did not realize how lucky he was to have Michael carry the load and the focus until after Michael took that sabbatical, and then all of a sudden that focus became on Scottie Pippen. Am I correct in that observation? Was he a better player with Michael than he was as a solo artist?
Well, you know, I can't say he was a better or worse player. You know, Michael was Scottie was a clone of Michael Jordan. You know, if you look at how Scottie's game was exactly the way Michael's game was. But he was just a longer player. That's all. That's the only thing. He was just a longer player, a longer defender, a longer stride. But their game was exactly the same. Now, when Michael left, yeah, all the pressure and the eyes focused on Scottie. Scottie wasn't as good of a leader as Michael was. That's the only difference. His leadership skills weren't the same as Michael's. Michael understood how to get everybody in place. Scottie was still learning how to make guys into better players.
We got about 45 seconds before we have to break here. I sometimes wondered whether he was having fun playing basketball, and I'm referring to Scottie Pippen. It looked like sometimes it was a tough go for him.
Well, you know what? In the beginning, it was tough because, like I said, all the negative and the headaches and all that stuff, it made it tough for him to really relax and play basketball. But after he starts winning championships, it became a lot easier because he's been through all the ups and downs. You know, it's almost similar to LeBron James right now. I mean, he went through all the heartache. Now he can play a little bit basketball a little bit more freely and have a little bit more fun at it.
Cliff Levingston has joined us on Sports Byline USA, 13 seasons in the NBA, and also a two-time NBA champion. We continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline.